each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds Have Changed. It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday. That means Father Coys is with you. We're going to wrinkle your brain yet again as we open up our minds to history and theology and philosophy and all those great things in between. Indeed, indeed. There.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Oh, well, Sherman, can you put it for a century? Just sort of like give it a... the 16th century, the 1500s, that's what we're going to go back to because
you're going to need a bigger boat.
We'll need a bigger radio station, too, I would say. Well, this is a pretty big radio station right here. And also, I'm happy to share with you my wonderful guest. Some of you met her last week as we started to dive into a little bit of history. Rachel Gerardo, God bless you for taking time to come down here and try to wrinkle some brains with me.
Thanks for having me on. I'm just a poor man's Tony, so I hope I'm a good substitute. We'll try.
Tony, did you get that? You just were given a wonderful compliment, you know, yeah. Which I come to think about it, I don't compliment Tony enough, you know. It's a guy thing, you know. We need to do that. Yeah, that's what happens. Okay, but lest we make the mistake we made last week and we didn't get into the meat of our discussion on the Reformation or some people like to call it the so-called Reformation, I being one of them, times. What did the Protestant Reformation consist of? And especially looking at, obviously, one of the main character, Martin Luther, if you remember, and I've used clips before. Some of you who are longtime Winds of Change listeners, there's an American historian / religion writer, Protestant, who I admire in a lot of different ways. He's a good pro-life voice. He doesn't like the shall we say. De-Christianizing reinterpretation of American history. I'm referring to Eric Metaxas.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, we're gonna wrinkle your brain. I don't know if we've wrinkled them yet, but it's a good warning, as it were. So, what I want to do is I brought some clips along. Eric Metaxas was interviewed by Dennis Prager, another well-known national talk show host fella, guy I find very wise in so many ways. But neither Dennis nor Eric are Catholic, and they're missing some points. More so Eric than Dennis, because Dennis is the interviewer and Eric is the interviewee in some of the clips that we want to see. And Rachel, you were kind enough to pull out the book. can you share for the listeners that subtitle you talk? Eric came out with a new book on Martin Luther, which is called
Luther, the Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World.
rediscovered God and changed the world. Well, I got to agree that he did change the world, but I'm not so quick to say that it was a change for the good. You know, and that's one of the criticisms that a lot of conservative political minds raise when a politician says, hope and change, vote for me.
My Lord, and things, such well, destruction.
Yeah, that, I get, wow. I don't know, Nick, did you realize I was somewhat hinting at the previous presidency of 8 years? Was that, you never know. But obviously the theme of the Obama administration was change. And one of the criticisms, and I would venture to say that Eric Metaxas had that same sense of being critical of just proclaiming change without analyzing what is being changed.
Yeah.
That, I'm afraid, is Eric could reassess his subtitle there of the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, not to get too ahead, but he does say that what Martin Luther created was basically a way of thinking that was the mother of all revolutions, sort of telling and not what you would expect from a typical conservative writer.
Yeah, yeah. And that's very interesting, because as soon as you said that, it reminded me of the introduction to Saul Alinsky's book on Rules for Radicals, which was the handbook for community organizers, some of whom became presidents of the United States. And that book by Saul Alinsky was dedicated to Satan, the mother of all radicals, or the father of all radicals. So it's an eerie, sticky, scary
connection
or parallel that we're seeing here. And it is a little sticky. It is a little scary. And it's going to be seen.
Danger, Noah Will Robinson. Danger.
Yeah, thoughts, and especially bad thoughts, are very dangerous. That's what feeds us here on the Winds of Change as we spend an hour in thought. but as I say that, I want to say, before we jump into listening to some of the interview between Dennis Prager and Eric Metaxas, I can almost sense some people listening to the radio and saying, oh, don't talk about the things that divide us. Try to concentrate on the things that unite us. I'm sure you've heard that expressed. And there's a time and a place. I agree. Sometimes it's not a time for focusing on what divides us. And there are other times that are better for focusing on what unites us. A talk show, a radio meditation, or as you're sitting down to study something and you really want to learn something about a particular topic, you don't just ignore things that are different between authors or experts. You need to discuss what separates you. Because here I'm going to say this. Listeners, remember this. I truly believe this is to ignore the things that divide us is to promote division. It's when you study with open mind, with charity in your heart, with a mutual respect for truth and the ability to have an open mind to change your mind when your mind sort of clicks in and says, oh, wait a minute, that's better than this. This idea is better than that idea. This truth is truer than this. This is true and this is false, et cetera. So, and you even said, I mentioned this, Rachel, and you had a little development on that idea. To ignore division is to
preserve it rather than address
it. That's it. To ignore the things that divide us is to preserve division, not to overcome it.
Right, right.
If we're truly interested in unity, if we're truly interested in getting along and coming together, you to ignore the things that divide you is a sure way of creating or preserving division. Because look at the history of Protestantism itself. When a congregation in a Protestant denomination happens, there are disputes within Protestant congregations, just as there are in Catholic congregations. But we have a much different attitude about disputes. When a dispute arises within a Protestant congregation, the answer is more often than not, let's go our separate ways. Mm-hmm. You go your way, I'll just start my own church, or I'll go to start my own church. And that approach to conflicts was the gift of Martin Luther, you could sort of say. But Eric Metaxas is presenting him as the champion. Well, he's presenting him as the champion of freedom, mm-hmm. of course, right?
Right. Freedom and democracy.
Without Martin Luther, we wouldn't have the sense of American freedom that we all, well, we cherish mm-hmm. and love, what that exactly means. It reminds me, as soon as that subject comes up, you got it, my friends. I hope you've purchased a Timothy Gordon book called The Catholic Republic, because in that book he beautifully describes the important distinction between freedom and license.
Wow.
And if you don't catch that,
you just wrinkle my brain, man.
If the distinction between freedom and license doesn't wrinkle your brain, well, then maybe you either don't have a brain or it's made out of a non-wrinkle substance. Okay. So anyways, are we ready to roll, Rachel? Because you have a few interesting quotes there. But let's start out. This interview goes back a year or two or so. I don't have the exact date. I could find it somewhere. But it doesn't matter exactly when. The ideas are still pertinent. And so this is Eric Metaxas speaking about his newfound sort of discovery of the greatness of the founder of Protestantism. And it goes like this.
In a way that we all, you know, want to deal with them. And so.
Okay, that was just a little part of him missed at the very beginning. He's saying, we want to all deal with Martin Luther in the same way, which that just seems like a strange admonition, or it's a strange comment. The fact that he's such a lightning rod of division doesn't seem to enter into the program here. So who is the we? Obviously those who those of Protestant Christian denominations would want to see him as a hero. Those of us who are not, those on the Catholic side, see more clearly his warts. But anyways, let's go. I think this is the question from Dennis Prager, where
what existed in the Christian world as of 1517?
Okay, it's a good question, and those who listen to Winds of Change here know that history is a fascinating topic we like to share with you. 1517, that was the year when Martin Luther nailed his 99 theses on the wall of the church door, right? So, Rachel, could you put in context, why would Dennis Prager be asking that question in the first place as a general audience? What existed in the Christian world at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to just establish what was the status quo so they can really suss out what makes Martin Luther a revolutionary.
Yeah. What was the status quo of Europe at the time? Or the whole, well, that's basically the
Christendom was, no one was ever martyred. It was peace at all times. Everyone agreed exactly on everything. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's what we're getting to,
That's
right?
what we're getting into, yeah. Listen to, now we I want to... We need to listen to, Dennis Prager asks, what existed in 1517? And here's Eric's answer to that question, when he says?
It's simple. The Christian church, so to speak, grew for 15 centuries. Actually, 10 centuries into it, the East and the West broke.
I want to stop it there for a second, too. He's right that it grew for 15 centuries, and he's right that it broke between around the 1000s and 11th century. But he's missing the point of the first 1,000 years of growth. That was your, what you were hinting at, Rachel, about that's a story of history riddled with martyrs, riddled with disputes. Eric is painting a picture of the growth of Christianity as a little seedling planted by Jesus, and just grows straight away with no obstacles, in his terminology. Nothing is, there's no difficulties.
Dissent didn't exist.
Arguments didn't exist. Conflicts didn't exist. Fights didn't exist. I don't know where he comes with that assessment of the first 1,000 years. You could say the first 1,500 years. You could say the first 2,000 years. There's this strange...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
What it sounds like to me, he's setting up a straw man in a certain sense, you know, to follow that line of argument. Okay, let's go a little bit more. So he already is dismissing the great amount of conflicts in those first 15 centuries. And for some reason, he focuses straight away on the division between East and West. Not that that has... I think he sees that as part of an important part, because it shows that Catholicism wasn't the only game in town after the 11th century. Though us Catholics would say, well, yes, both East and West were both Catholic. The Protestant problem, or the Protestant change in the world of the world of religions, was different than the change between East and West. Let's hear a little bit more. This is what he goes on. He says,
"Have the Eastern Orthodox Church, and then you have the Western Church, which is centered in Rome. We know it as the Roman Catholic Church. But other than that, you had no other expressions of the Christian faith. The church, which of course became a monumental institution, was all that anybody knew of the Christian faith."
Okay, any comments, Rachel, that you can make? There's one blaring blind spot that I have.
Go for it. Go for it. Lay into it.
Because, again, a lot of times when discussing sticky issues, things are said that are true, but they're not the fullness of the faith, the fullness of truth, because it's true that there were no other Christian expressions. There were no other expressions of Christian faith. But the incredible blindness is that there were many other expressions of faith. Mm-hmm. In other words, there were many other religions.
Right.
And Christianity as a religion had to grow in a world amongst other religions that were very anti-Christianity. And so to miss that point is to miss an incredible part of the beginning of the church. And he seems to just dismiss it completely. Okay, Nick wants us to take a quick little break. We'll come back. We'll plow through a little bit more of this, and hopefully this will help us in our pursuit of truth. And it is within truth that we find unity. And so this is an exercise in coming together. Let's always remember that, my friends, in a spirit of love and charity. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDC.
Dear friends, you may have noticed that our live stream has been down. We're looking under the hood to get that fixed. Now, in the meantime, visit the Winds of Change Facebook page and look at the top post. And click on the Vista Stream Guys link to download the Winds Media Player so that you can enjoy Winds of Change on your computer, no matter how you listen. Thank you for listening to Winds of Change.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Koska is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. There is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org, and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced-level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's 1 block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with us as we wrinkle your brain. We're in the 16th century, 1500s. Discussing what happened to the church vis-a-vis the Protestant Reformation, vis-a-vis Martin Luther, vis-a-vis a new book out by Eric Metaxas, who has a lot of wonderful good things to contribute to the dialogue with history, especially American history. I do sense that a pro-life, pro-marriage Catholic appreciates a pro-life, pro-marriage Protestant. We're very much together in these moral issues. And so I'm a little hesitant to expose my differences with Eric Metaxas, but I believe it's a good thing to do to analyze these things. It helps us understand more clearly what Catholicism stands for and teaches and what we're asked to believe. As I said in the first segment, to ignore our differences is to, I said, create division. But I like what you said, Rachel. It preserves division.
Yeah, given our position in history, I think that's an accurate way of putting it.
Yeah, we'll never overcome what divides us if we don't talk about what divides us. Mm-hmm. Unless you take the position that it doesn't matter.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people do. Come down on that. So, but not us, not the listeners of Winds of Change, I'll tell you. We got marvelous, faithful, and thoughtful listeners, of course. So, okay, we're analyzing an interview that Dennis Prager had with Eric Metaxas after his book came out. And so let's go a little bit farther. He's speaking about, Dennis asked him, what's the setup? What was the church like? And so he goes on a little bit more. Eric does. He goes on by saying,
and so if the church said X or Y or Z, there was nobody who could ever say, well, I think you might be halfway off on that. There was no dissent. So on some level, it's like a totalitarian state, except it wasn't like a totalitarian state. But the concept is that there will be no dissent. The little guy has no voice. The little priest has no voice. The powers that be make the decisions. And if you dissent, you could be burned at the stake. Or you.
Comments? You want to go first? Or
You go. I'll go. I think you have things to say.
So. I'm bubbling over here. Rachel can see me clamoring it. To say that there was no dissent for 1,500 years is, I'll put it in the context of those of us who love American history, to say that there was no dissent until 1970 or would be just silly.
Mm-hmm.
To say that there was no dissent, that the little guy had no voice, he paints a picture of the first 1,500 years of the church as Jesus picked Peter. Peter became the Pope, and the Pope ruled with an iron fist. No one was able to question him. No one was able to counter his positions. He was the strong arm of the Catholic faith and all the rest of the popes up until Martin Luther. Finally, Martin Luther came and challenged that that absolute authority that existed in the Catholic Church. I need to remind Eric, and I need to remind everyone, that Peter was martyred. to say that there was no room for dissent, I think Peter would stay there and say, wait a minute. I'm not the one in power here. I'm the one trying to present a truth that's being rejected. And not only Peter, but almost every pope for the first 400 years. I think the first pope that was not martyred was in the mid-300s. Hmm. You know, and to completely ignore that part of the story, and to think that the Catholic Church just marched along from the beginning with this dominant attitude where there was no dissent possible. And even after the 400s, every century, if not every decade, leaders in the church had to discuss and fight and battle. And the fact that there was battles and fights is not the issue. That's what Eric Metaxas is pointing out. He said, well, up until Martin Luther, there were no dissenting. There were no battles. He couldn't be wrong, more wrong. Mm-hmm. The thing that he's missing is that through those battles and through those fights came a certainty, came an authority, and remember what is in the gospel. We find in the gospels why what was said of Jesus. Where does this guy get his wisdom? He doesn't speak like the scribes and the Pharisees, but what? Speaks with authority. Now, if that's true with Jesus, and Jesus is still the heart and soul of the church, then we should be able to find that sense of certainty. One of my favorite converts to Catholicism, John Henry Newman, who is a kind of a Chestertonian figure in the Catholic Church, G.K. Chesterton. I'm saying that looking at Rachel over here because Rachel is from the great, wonderful academy. What's the name of that school again?
Yes, Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family, out in the western suburbs.
Absolutely.
Great classical Catholic high school out there.
It is. I love the teachers. I love all the kids.
We have the best history teachers. You know them.
You really do. You really do. And that's so helpful. And as a pastor, if I was looking to hire somebody, and if you're just a business person, you wanted somebody with a good, strong faith life and all the rest, I'd see that on the resume and I'd say, this is the kind of person I want. Anyways, can I say this? It's the closest thing to a local Steubenville.
Okay, yeah. I'm fine with that.
There's a great spirit at Steubenville, University of St. Francis University.
Although, just wrinkled my brain, man.
Although I know there's no perfect place or anything, but
right.
if if you're looking for that kind of sense, you'll find it at Chesterton
Academy. We do have a couple of faculty members went there. So mm-hmm. that probably explains it a little bit. We have a lot of that good fervor and education there, too.
Yeah. So, anywho. Okay. But let's keep going on with Eric Metaxas. And if you have another comment or so, Rach, please feel free. But here, this is going to be, he's going to change topics a little bit here.
Trouble.
And so
this isn't to say that the church was evil or that everybody in leadership was evil, but you can understand that it was oppressive and that if you ended up seeing something wrong, bringing it up was not an easy thing. You didn't know if you would be celebrated, thank you for telling us because we want to fix this, or if people would say to you, hey, shut up or we'll burn you at the stake. Usually it was the latter. You realize that once something becomes an institution, it allies itself with power. Jesus was allied with weakness. He died. He didn't kill. He let them.
Okay, I think he's touching on another important topic there, which I think he's getting wrong. first of all, he's saying the Catholic Church played the game, that is, with Martin Luther, very poorly because all they did was tell him, shut up. Again, nothing can be further from the truth if you look at the history and the records. There were constant efforts to get him to explain and talk. And anybody who's interested in this topic has to appreciate one Catholic figure by the name of St. Charles Borromeo, who was instrumental in trying to get Martin Luther to clarify, to say mm-hmm. things a little bit differently, as to not step over the line of heresy. And Martin Luther didn't show up to some of those invitations. He was advised, and he ran as fast as he could to get cover from the civil authorities of his day. The world of Martin Luther was dominated that's the wrong word. The Holy Roman Empire with the at the head being Charles V, it's kind of a strange thing for us Americans to realize, but that whole area of Germany and the Netherlands was kind of ruled over by a Spaniard because that was part of the Holy Roman Empire. And Charles V, being a Spaniard, he went to Spain. As a matter of fact, he went to Spain not speaking Spanish. I remember reading mm-hmm. that somewhere.
Yeah, I think it was Warren Carroll, right?
That must have been. So he's a great historian, Warren Carroll. Do look up his stuff. He's got a great series called The Founding of Christendom. So, Eric is, again, making this big mistake that the church didn't try, that they only said, shut up, or we'll burn you at the stake. The most famous one burned at the stake was John Huss. Catholic Church didn't do that much burning at the stake, though. To be perfectly honest, there were. it was the form of capital punishment, the idea that you could commit a crime worthy of capital punishment just in the theological world is just unknown in our minds today. But it was the combination between the theological world and the, shall we say, the world of politics was a marriage, was a bond. To attack one, you attack the other. To attack, to defend one, you defend the other and all that. So, he's missing that point that Catholic Church bent over backwards to try to help Martin Luther avoid getting excommunicated. Mm-hmm. And then Martin Luther increased the anger by jumping off his starting point. I think that's the point that Eric Metaxas is missing. The starting point, everybody agrees, was clean up your act. Corruption, financial corruption and sexual corruption. I guess the more things change, the more they remain the same, right? And so Martin Luther started off with that, but he quickly evolves into trying to change some fundamental moral principles, theological principles, doctrinal principles. Let's keep going on here, and we'll get a little bit more taste of
him when he could have, you know, recanted and said anything. And so when you have an institution and human beings take control of an institution, even if it's a good institution, power comes
right
in,
no power corrupt. I agree, that's all correct. The corruption, everybody, even Catholics, acknowledge.
How
I being a Catholic would acknowledge that at times power corrupts. Well, notice I slipped in the little adverb there. At times, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But then he goes on to make a tremendous philosophical maxim that truth and power are always in opposition. Truth and power are always in opposition. That's a bad principle. if you believe that, what do I want to say? Well, let's hear how we. Well, you see that, in let's say in family life or in business world, Rachel, you're a businesswoman in a lot of different ways. obviously, power can corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the but come?
No, I mean, yeah. In the book, he gets into that a little bit more, and you kind of start to see that the claim, the way he puts it, definitely begs the question. You know, it begs you to kind of look into it more and put a little bit more pressure on the idea, because it's sort of an extreme idea.
It's appealing, as we might say, to the common people who feel victimized.
Mm-hmm. It's also a very American way of putting that dynamic.
Which is a little strange in the sense of, I'll throw in another fairly famous radio talk show host, guy by the name of Michael Medved, who uses as his mantra, we are not victims. We are proud not to be victims. But the victim mentality is the mentality that this presentation of Martin Luther appeals to, namely, power in and of itself is in opposition to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just plays into the hand of the devil more than it does to angels. because power has to be seen as neutral. You can use power for good. You can use power as for bad.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is a brain wrinkler. That is, just like, and I'll compare it to another red meat issue that's always talked about, especially it's hot with the more conservative Americans, and that is guns. To say that guns are automatically evil is to miss the point that sometimes guns are good.
Oh, sure, yeah.
When you're fighting a bad guy.
Yep. They're neutralizing, as they say.
And they're neutralizing. And if you have a crazed shooter in your school and no one has a gun, he will kill more students than if some of the adults in charge had guns.
Mm-hmm.
So what Eric Metaxas is criticizing Catholicism for, he's mimicking those who are criticizing the Second Amendment type people. Does that make any sense?
Interesting.
I think it makes perfect sense. But another thing that makes sense is Nick wants us to take another break. So let's come right back. Stay tuned, my friends. We're We're talking about the 16th century with the Reformation. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Save the dates for Prairie Fest. Friday through Sunday, August 9th through the 11th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois.
More info at ByzantineCatholic.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyce here with Rachel Gerardo, one of the great team members of Chestern Academy of the Holy Family. Great, beautiful Catholic school out in the western suburbs. If you haven't heard about it, well, it's too bad. Shame on you.
Well, you can go to www.cathf.com. See? They had to chime in with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it runs right by. It's not C-H.
C-A-T-H-F.com. So Chesterton Academy of the Holy Family.
Chesterton Academy of the Holy C-A.
That's the quick way to do it.
Okay. Well, very good. I'll try to put something in my Flock notes, too. And by the way, if you you like to get a little intro to the show on Wednesdays, send me an email. I like to hear from people out there listening. My email is the 3 words together, no spaces, unlike other nations, at gmail.com. The reason I'm passionate about this topic, too, is that it's related to the reason why my email is unlike other nations. Because a lot of people look at my email and say, oh, you're like pro-American, which I am. I love America, and I am pro-American, especially when people attack it unfairly, which is so happens. I feel a little bit like, I'll use a Chesterton quote here. Chesterton once said, criticizing, I think he mentioned it in terms of Christianity, when you criticize Christianity from outside, you are a bit like the one who criticizes a marriage. A husband, when he's out in the world, or I think he put it in terms of his wife, the wife, when she is out in the world, will defend her husband everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Get him back at home and she will be his biggest critic.
Right. Yeah.
So in other words, this is my love. I'll do the criticizing around here, I'll do the defending with those who don't love. The woman who loves her husband, and she's the one who knows her husband's faults better than anyone. If you don't love my husband the way I love you, then I'm going to defend him when you're criticizing him. Bring him home, and I know we love each other, that we're going to argue about our differences.
That's when the rolling pin comes out, chasing them around the kitchen.
And that's a good little Chestertonian thought there. Okay, so let's listen a little bit more of Eric, and as he goes on about the new hero that he sort of discovers. And this is one of the next thing he says. He
goes, character is no exaggeration. He's probably the most influential person who has lived, except maybe for Jesus, in the last 2,000 years. If you had to pick somebody, it's insane.
That's a very interesting point.
500 years ago, that is created the world in which we live. Democracy, freedom, what you name it.
Okay, the world in which we live, democracy and freedom. He created the modern world in which we live. I got to say, again, he couldn't be more wrong. Well, I want to take that back. He's somewhat right, but somewhat wrong, because the modern world does have a strong sense of democracy. It has a strong sense of freedom that may not have existed the way it does now in the modern world. But to say that the Greeks didn't invent democracy is to insult the Greeks. Mm-hmm. And even the Romans with the Roman Empire, they had a republic and they had a representative form of government and all the rest. And to say that he's hinting at a topic that's huge, my friends, that if you're loyal to an authority, you give up your freedom. That to me is immature. That to me is like a teenager arguing against their parents. to say that when you follow an authority, you are giving up your freedom. I think is what he's saying there, is what he's saying Protestantism gave to the world. And I'm saying that that is a dangerous philosophy, a dangerous way to think. Mm-hmm. We were talking a little bit before. You were calling it childish, and I was calling it teenagerness.
Adolescent, yeah.
Yeah, because all teenagers rebel against their parents' authority. Well, maybe not all, but a good one.
I bet you didn't. You seem like a good. You would have been a good kid.
I sometimes stayed out later than I was supposed to.
8:30.
Okay, Mom. It's only 8:37. No. If
you've proven my point.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And if my brothers and sisters call in, please don't send in and reveal all my. Anyway, okay. But my point is that following good authority is part of being mature. And sometimes the authority is not perfect. So sometimes rebellion is called for. Sometimes disobedience is called for. But when you do disobey just authority, it's a moment of conscience. You're laying your life on the line, so to speak. It is where conscience is formed in a great many ways. And I'll say this, too, to Eric Metaxas. He's saying Martin Luther created the modern world, democracy, freedom, you name it, all the things that we talk about. And then Dennis Prager chimed right in and says yes, because when he says we, I think he sort of means American conservative voices today. Yeah. And I sometimes use the term. I'm a conservative Catholic. Sometimes I don't like that term because it sounds like you're just preserving the status quo, and conservative Catholics or true Catholics really aren't about preserving the status quo, because the status quo has gone so far off the rails. Mm-hmm. And so he says Martin Luther helped create the modern world, so I'll say I'll give you that, but then Martin, you're going to have to accept all the yuck of today.
Right, right.
You say you created the modern world, and now we spend a lot of time and energy criticizing the problems of the modern world, especially in the moral decay that we're experiencing, bankruptcy and all the rest. We can go into details, which I'll hold back on. Mm-hmm. But if he's the architect of the modern world, then he has to take responsibility for the bad that we're experiencing today.
Right, right.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I think he brings that up a little bit in the book, but it's he kind of glosses over all the bad things, right? He always talks about the marketplace of ideas, but you know, when I think of the marketplace of ideas, I kind of think of the way our universities have decayed because of the relativism and basically solipsism that prevail there.
There's a quote a little bit later in this this audio clip that I have where Eric Metaxas says, well, yeah, a lot of things did go bad, but he writes it off as the price of freedom.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
We need freedom, and so we're gonna let a lot of bad things happen because we don't want to be slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's the trade-off for him is worth it.
Yeah. And what he's missing is that beautiful Catholic attitude where you can stand with authority and with freedom.
Mm-hmm.
They are not mortal enemies, Mortal Kombat. Isn't there a game?
It's a legendary video game of that name, yes.
Mortal Kombat.
Never played it, of course.
Neither have I, but I'm sure it's kind of fun. Well, I don't know. But anyways, his vision is that authority and freedom are engaged in mortal combat. So you got, in order to be friends with freedom, you got to accept mortal. Nick knows what Mortal Kombat is. He's the man over there. Okay, so let's go a little bit farther. We're actually coming close to the end of our time, but let's go a little bit farther and see what else we have here, because
he too, he says, in effect, we are really children of the Protestant Reformation.
Yeah,
and in other words, was he out to reform Catholicism or create Protestantism?
Oh, well, at the end of his life, he had created Protestantism, and there were many Protestant churches by the end of his life. But when he started, it didn't even enter his mind slightly to split the church.
So, you know, I'll agree with Eric in the beginning. Like I said, at the beginning, Luther was just upset with corruption. A lot of the way people are in the world today. And he wanted to see the corruption abated. Unfortunately, he didn't just stick with that. And that's what St. Charles Borromeo tried to get him to stick to. Charles Borromeo went out of his way to say, oh my gosh, yes, there is corruption. We got to reform. As a matter of fact, one of the popes at that time, I think it was, Gregory the Ninth, perhaps, I think it was. Leo the Tenth is probably the pope most associated with the Protestant Reformation. But there was a, I think it was the pope before Leo who was famous for, he didn't want to get involved in the mess of the Reformation. He was too worried about maintaining his papal states. And as a matter of fact, one of the segments of history that is lost to Eric Metaxas and many others is that the Emperor Charles V, who was not a saint, we don't call him Saint Charles V, but he really felt the problems that Martin Luther and his theology were creating. And so Charles V, being the civil authority, says to the Pope, please call a synod. Please call a council. Discuss these difficult theological matters and come to an answer. And the popes were dragging their feet. It took like 25, 30 years to get the Council of Trent. Eric Metaxas is right in the sense that Martin Luther at the beginning just wanted the reform. But when he crossed the line and started laying down some new principles, namely sola scriptura and solo fide, he exasperated the fire instead of putting out the fire. Are some of those recollections similar to what you remember from history?
yes. I couldn't tell you which pope, but generally.
That's why I need a scorecard in front of me to remember all the different popes and everything.
It is hard.
Very hard, but it is. Okay, so here we go. Let's do a little bit more while we still have a little bit of time left here. You
got what it. Could the church have done to prevent the rise of Protestantism?
It's a good question.
The Catholic Church handled things about as badly as you could have handled them. In other words, here's a man who was willing to compromise, was willing to do anything to...
Wrong.
They put him in such a corner that... he was basically trying to say a few things humbly.
Wrong.
And their response was, in effect, shut up. Recant what you've said. If you don't, you'll be declared a heretic.
And what Eric is missing is the he wanted the Catholic Church wanted him to shut up on the new teachings, not the call for reformation, not the call for purification, not the call for getting corruption out. And so he's completely missing, and by doing so, he's turning a lot of people away from the real problem. And that real problem is manifesting itself more clearly now. I reference once again Timothy Gordon's book, The Catholic Republic, because Timothy Gordon does a beautiful job at showing how these mistakes of Protestantism have had 200 years or 500 years to grow. And we're seeing maybe with a few minutes left here, maybe that's the way to let's take the gay rights dilemma. Mm-hmm. I'll call it that. We just finished June, and I don't remember seeing a June so strongly
full of rainbows. Right? Rainbows everywhere you turn.
Everywhere you turn, you know. And one of the teenagers from our church had a really interesting comment when she was at church last Sunday, and I tried to explain the right attitude that we need to have with compassion, but still holding strong.
Sure.
And she said, "Oh, Father, that was a nice sermon." And she says, "You know, it's a struggle for me because I'm losing friends."
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Doesn't that hurt?
Yeah, that'll happen.
That hurts to hear her say that. And either she's a senior in high school or she's either high school or young college. I can't remember, but. Right. It was one of the Colorellis, a little shout out for the Colorelli family. And many people who may be loyal listeners to Winds of Change know that wonderful family. But so how does the debate and the completely turning upside down of the sense of marriage, how can we lay that at the feet of Martin Luther? Rachel, you can see a connection, I would think, right? Or is there, because Martin Luther, he was, number one, he was upset at the sexual immorality of some of the leaders of the church. I think I don't know if he was more mad at the sexual immorality or the financial immorality. A lot of times they go hand in hand, mm-hmm, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But okay. You can make the difference. Poor people can do sexual sins, and rich people can be pure and holy or whatever. But anyways, they're two distinct areas of human behavior and human frailty and sinfulness and all the rest. But by introducing solo fide, works don't matter, then morality doesn't matter, and therefore the present state of the confusion over marriage can be laid at the feet of Martin Luther, even though a lot of wonderful Protestant Christians are very much against the gay rights movement of today. Mm-hmm. But the principles that Martin Luther set down are so strong, we can't turn it around without the Catholic sense of natural law, which means you come to truth even without the Bible. Mm-hmm. The Bible is not the only authority. And so that's where sola scriptura and sola fide are twin sisters of this same huge problem that is created. Here, I want to use a quote from, this might be a good way to go out, from Pope Benedict Emeritus, where he remembers, he gave an interview and he wrote a letter a couple months ago, and he says, "I still remember how the Jesuit faculty in Frankfurt trained a highly gifted young Father Schuller with the purpose of developing a morality based entirely on Scripture. Father Schuller's beautiful dissertation shows a first step towards building a morality based on Scripture. Father Schuller was then sent to America to further studies and come back with the realization that from the Bible alone, morality could not be expressed systematically." Mm-hmm. You nailed it. My friends, we got to appreciate these difficulties. We need to talk about some of our differences so that we can find unity. Isn't that beautiful? I'm Father Tom Coyce. You've been listening to Listener Supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.